You're listening to Lace Up with your host, VJ Johnson II. Grab your tennis shoes, get your cleats, because it's time to lace up. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Lace Up. I'm your host, VJ Johnson II, ready to give you the latest, hottest news and updates in the world of sports. I appreciate everybody jumping in and joining the podcast and giving me a little bit of time to talk some good, healthy sports talk as always. Look, man, I know y'all noticed something different, man. I am now on camera. For those of you who listen to me regularly, man, you can not only hear me on the podcast via the audio portion with my voice, but now you can see me on camera, man. Really excited about this opportunity, man. Really made an investment in this show. Spent some money on some equipment and a camera, man. I'm excited, man, that I've gotten up to this point where I can actually put some video out there for you guys to view the show, man. So I appreciate everybody who's been rocking with me up until this point. I appreciate everybody who's been sticking by me, encouraging me, uplifting me, man, and just excited to continue this journey with you all, man, and bring you some more content. Like I always say, hope everybody has had a great, productive, and safe week. I know I'm always talking about the weather, man, and this is that time of the year where it really does get crazy, man. So make sure you guys are taking care of yourself, taking your vitamins, dressing right, and making sure that you're eating healthy as well. Don't want anybody getting sick out there, but I know I missed last week, so I apologize about that. But just to catch you guys up on things, man, I was actually out for a good reason, man. I was down in Florida at Universal Studios, man. My girlfriend actually got us some surprise tickets, one-day ticket to Universal Studios. And so we ended up getting down there late on last Wednesday and went to the park on that Thursday and stayed throughout the day. They did have to shut down a little bit early, which we weren't too thrilled about because they had the Halloween Horror Nights, which we will be looking into next year. But it rained, of course, after we got into the park, in true Florida fashion. I would say it wouldn't be Florida without any rain. So it did rain when we got down there, but that ended up clearing up. And good thing about Universal Studios, majority of the rides are all virtual inside. So didn't have any issues there. Funny thing, when we first got into the park, we hadn't stepped like 20 feet into the park, and we start to talk to and think to ourselves, like, man, like, we really wish we could be in Islands of Adventure, because we really wanted to get on the Hagrid ride, the new Hagrid ride that was down there in Islands of Adventure. And then obviously you have the Hulk and you have all the other rides that are at and more roller coasters that are at Islands of Adventure, I should say. And so we were contemplating, like, man, should we pull the trigger on tickets? But as we looked at the forecast, when I tell you all, it said thunderstorms the entire day, from literally like 4 a.m. all day for that Friday. And so I was like, man, I don't know. I want to go, but we'll just continue to look at the weather. So, woke up that next morning, and I kept checking the weather throughout the rest of that day. Woke up that next morning and nothing really changed. It just continued to say it was thunderstorms. And it went from 40% all the way up to 55%, all the way up to 65%, right? So I'm really thinking to myself, like, man, I'm going to be pissed if we spend money on these tickets and we don't get a chance to go, because there's no, there's no refunds for stuff like that, right? That's just the risk you take going to Florida and going to the theme parks, especially in hurricane season. So, we finally decided to, look, just get dressed, just go down there. And we actually bought a ticket after we got into the parking garage, ended up going in there, man. And God cleared that weather up, man. God was working miracles as he always does, man. He did not allow it to storm. It didn't storm. It didn't do anything. The sun came out and we really took a leap of faith, man. We really stepped out on faith. It was praying to God that he kept the weather clear. So, just grateful for that and being able to experience the what they've done really in both theme parks when it comes to Harry Potter, man. We are huge Harry Potter fans. that is something that we are really, really, really into. And so we had the matching Harry Potter outfits, man, for each day. You know, it's only right. You got to match with the Harry Potter fits. But yeah, man. Yeah, it was an amazing experience. We did get a chance to ride the Hagrid ride. I'm not going to tell y'all how long we actually waited to get on this ride, but I will tell you, I have never been on the brink of insanity like I was waiting to get on that ride. I've never been up to that point where I felt restless and hopeless and just it was all of the emotions that you could think of waiting to get on that ride, right? And we were this close to walking away and saying forget it, but stuck it out and it ended up opening up, and we were closer than what we thought toward the end when we were ready to give up. And yeah, man, that was one of the best rides I've ever been on. I mean, they did an outstanding job with that ride. And, you know, next time around, I will encourage you, and this is something that we're going to do too. Make sure you get that express pass. I am telling you right now, do not go without getting the express pass. It is some more money, but I'm telling you, it's worth the investment. But the ride was worth it, man. Will I do that again? Will I stay? And will we wait in line for 3 hours again? Absolutely not. But an amazing time. Had a great time and enjoyed Florida as we always do. With that being said, man, let's jump into things, man. I am excited to talk about what's been going on in the world of sports since we were last together. Really want to unpack some things that have transpired. And with that being said, man, let's just first jump into things. And I want to kick things off with the WNBA because I want to send a huge congratulations out to Asia Wilson and the Las Vegas Aces, man, for completing the sweep and winning the WNBA championship. Man, this is their third WNBA championship in 4 years. And for those of you who have been following me and have listened to, you know, each show, you know that a few shows back when we were initially talking about the WNBA playoffs, my pick to go to the championship and to win was the Las Vegas Aces. So I stood true to that, and they ended up doing just that and winning the WNBA championships. And man, shout out to the performance by Asia Wilson. She led the way in game four with 31 points and 9 rebounds, 4 assists and 3 blocks. And she earned WNBA Finals MVP honors. So huge congrats out to her and the team. And, you know, after the game, her coach said, look, you have the Mount Rushmore right of players, but Asia is on Mount Everest all on her own, right? And so one thing about the Mount Rushmore, for those of you who may not know, when we're talking about the Mount Rushmore when it comes to sports, this means your top players in any given sport, right? So you have your Mount Rushmore of Major League Baseball, right? So who would you consider the top four, top five baseball players of all time? Same with the NBA, same with the NFL. So now with the WNBA, of course, you have your Candace Parkers, you have your Lisa Leslies, your Diana Taurasi. Like, you have your players up there that you would consider your Mount Rushmore. And so looking at this, you know, and looking at what Asia Wilson was able to do, and how she was able to do it, is just it's crazy, and it's amazing to see what she's been able to accomplish. And I want to really run down, you know, what she was able to do, you know, up until this point throughout her career. And I just want to run down some of her accolades. But before that, I did want to, you know, talk about, you know, her postseason performance a little bit more, because she did average a double-double throughout the postseason. And I want to specifically look at each game and her numbers in each of these games. So game one, she put up 21 and 10. Game two, she put up 28 points and 14 rebounds. Now, game three, which was a huge game in this series, 34 points and 14 rebounds, including the game winner as time expired, right, to give them the 3-0 lead. And this was on the road at Phoenix. And then in game four, the performance that completed the sweep, the 31 points, 9-rebound performance, man. I really couldn't agree more that she is, in a league of her own on Mount Everest, right? And that's not to take away from any of the other greats, but she's just doing things that we have not seen done before at this level. And so let me just run down some of her accolades, like I just mentioned, and let you make the decision, right? Let you be the judge of that. And I already know how I feel about it, but let's just look at her career up to this point. So she is the first WNBA player in history to win a championship, finals MVP, league MVP, and defensive player of the year in the same season. That has never been done before. Asia Wilson did that. She is the only player with 300 points in a single WNBA postseason, which is this year, put up 300 points in the postseason. She's a four-time WNBA MVP. And so those years being 2020, 2022, 2024, and this year, she has the WNBA single season rebound record from that was done last year. She's a three-time WNBA champion in 22, 23, and this year. Two-time WNBA Finals MVP in 23 and 25. And she's a three-time WNBA Defensive Player of the Year in 2022, 2023, and this year. So again, just looking at her dominance, her leadership, her numbers, things that we have not seen done before, it is safe to make the argument for her being, the best to ever do it, right? And then the crazy thing about this, y'all, is she still has more career left to play. Still more to add on to what she's already done, right? And it's no telling what other records she's gonna get. She can outdo herself, which is the even crazier part about this, right? So again, congratulations to the Las Vegas Aces, Asia Wilson, on the performance that they did, man, sweeping the Phoenix Mercury, man, and bringing again a third championship in 4 years. That is huge. Looking forward to seeing what next season brings. Now I want to transition, man, and go into college football, because there was a game that happened. I'm talking about the Georgia and Auburn game this past weekend, where a lot of controversy took place when it comes to the officiating within this game. I really want to unpack that and give my opinion on this, because I did watch this entire game, and we have an issue when it comes to officiating, right, in college football, and it needs to be addressed, right? And I will first off say, before I get into my thoughts about what happened throughout this game, I thoroughly dislike both of these teams, right? Georgia, can't stand them. Auburn, of course, can't stand them. I'm an Alabama alum. You guys see my jersey. For those of you who are watching me on camera, I got my Smitty jersey on. Lean to the side a little bit so y'all can see that. Got one of my national championship hats on. Notice I said one of my national championship hats, because look, we do at Alabama, man. We bring home national championships, and I know a lot of people have had some jokes. Oh, you guys haven't been there and won since 2020. That's fine. Look. Watch what we do this year. Still, look, we're still in the mix, and even after what happened in week one. But we'll talk about Alabama just a little bit later. Again, I want to focus on what happened in this game, because there were some critical moments in this game, and really just a bad job by the officiating crew that was assigned to this game. And so one of the situations you had, and this is a really momentum a swinger of this game, it really became one of the big differences in the game. And so you had Auburn, they go up early 7-0, then they eventually brought that lead up to 10. So it's 10-0. Auburn is driving. They finally get the ball back down in the red zone, and with the opportunity to go up 17-0. So the ball is at the 1 yard line, or inside the 1 yard line, And you have them with an opportunity to go up again 17-0 in heading into halftime. Jackson Arnold actually takes the ball on a quarterback sneak, and ball comes loose as he's crossing the goal line. The officials rule it as a fumble. So they go back to the replay assist because they can't decide whether or not it was a fumble, whether or not it wasn't a fumble, or if it was a touchdown. So they go to replay. So as you see the replay, and you know we're watching it, we're all seeing it, and you can see the very tip of the ball cross the goal line. As he's crossing the goal line, the ball comes loose. And for those of you who you know needed a little bit more explanation, all that needs to happen for something to be a touchdown, for a play to be a touchdown, is the very tip of the ball needs to break the plane. It just needs to hit the white line, cross the white line. The very tip of the football, not the entire football, not half the football, the very tip of the football, that's all you need for it to be considered a touchdown. That happened as you were, and they continue to do the freeze frames and go pixel by pixel. It still showed the ball was right aligned with the goal line, and as he hit it, simultaneously the ball came loose. But again, it was there before the ball came loose, and he had the ball pinned to his chest. You can really see it, honestly. Go back and look at it if you don't believe me. But you know, I'm sitting here saying to myself, okay, that. You know, we're all like that's a touchdown. So they ultimately, to make a long story short, they ruled it a fumble. Georgia gets the ball back. They drive all the way down the field and end up kicking the field goal. So instead of it being 17-0 at halftime, it is 10-3 at halftime. Huge momentum swing. And, you know, in the second half, Auburn was just never really able to overcome just that call, really and truly. And so, I mean, there were some calls that went bad on both ends, but that was a huge miss by the officiating crew that I thought was just terrible. The second thing that I want to bring up is the fact that there was a situation where Georgia had the ball. There was third down in, I want to say, 8 or 9, and the play clock's running down. And Kirby's running down the sidelines, signaling for a timeout. So the referees charged the timeout to Georgia because Kirby Smart was actually calling a timeout. He's going down the sidelines doing like this. This is your timeout signal. For those of you who can see me on camera, he is signaling, running down the field, signaling timeout. After they charged the timeout to Georgia, Kirby then cries and whines to the referees that he was not calling a timeout, but instead he was telling him that some of the players on the defense were clapping. When it comes to the clapping situation, there's a new rule in college football now where defensive players cannot clap before and try to like confuse the offense before they snap the ball. So you know, last year there were a lot of times where you had like linebackers clapping any player like up on the line of scrimmage that was clapping to try to confuse the offense. That you can no longer do that, which you really shouldn't have been able to do it last year anyway. But they've implemented that rule. And now there was like a safety, I guess, in the back that wasn't really even clapping his hands like that to confuse the offense. First and foremost, he's 15 yards beyond where the offense is. So there's no way, even if the safety was clapping his hands, which I didn't see anything egregious at all looking at the replay. Even if he was, there's no way you would hear that in a stadium jam packed full of students and fans, on 3rd and 9, you know how loud it already is. There's no way you're going to hear that. So again, Kirby is crying to the referees over and over again. I was calling time. I was saying that they were clapping. I wasn't calling time out. The referees, what do? They huddle up. They go back. They remove the timeout that they charged to Georgia. They put 25 seconds back on the play clock, and they give the ball back reset the play clock, and Georgia has the ball. I thought that was one of the most ridiculous things that I've ever seen. You actually let Kirby Smart, who has had a history of going to referees and crying, and he does it every game, all game long. He's whining and crying to the referees. And, you know, Kirby's a guy, obviously, came from Alabama. A lot of respect for Kirby Smart and, you know, what he was able to do, you know, for Alabama defensively and everything like that. But ever since he's gone to Georgia, obviously, like, he wants to be the next Saban. Like, let's call it what it is, right? He the way that he's coached and the way that he's carried himself, he's obviously wants to be, you know, seen as a Nick Saban level type of coach. And, you know, many people call him, you know, the greatest coach in college football right now, or the best coach, I should say greatest, the best coach in college football right now. And, you know, which is, they won, you know, won a couple national championships and go, you know, cool. You know, you can say Kirby Smart is the best, you know, best coach in college football right now. You know, I'm not going to argue with that. I'm not sitting up here to debate that. But what I am debating is the fact that they allowed him to gaslight them. And he does this. He has a history and a pattern of doing this. Is going to these referees and crying to them the entire game. He's standing on the field, like jumping up and down. He's doing all this stuff. And it's like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Why are y'all allowing stuff like this to happen? You gotta at some point, as an officiating crew, come together and say, listen, like, this is something that's been happening. We need to stop this from happening and call the game fair. There's no way you should allow Kirby Smart to convince you that he was not calling the timeout when you could clearly see it on replay, even if you needed to use the replay assist. Any signal like that, that is a timeout. No, there's no debate about that. Clapping is clapping. Signaling a timeout is signaling a timeout. So, you know, I'm not going to spend, you know, a whole lot of time about that anymore. But I just thought that it was just egregious the way that they officiated that game. There's other games, not just that one, where we've seen these referees who have no idea what they're doing. They are not even utilizing, you know, replay correctly. And you got guys that are sitting there watching penalties happen. They're not calling holding penalties that are blatant. You know, you have situations where, you know, players are offsides, there's pass interference calls that are not. I mean, and I'm not just saying that's just happening in the SEC, but I'm an SEC guy. So, I mean, I watch each conference. I watch other games. It's happening in other conferences too. But just officiating as a whole needs to be better. And we say this every year, but it's the truth, right? And specifically in the SEC, I just have seen just some inexcusable performances by these officiating crews. And again, I'm a Bama fan. Through and through, alumni of Alabama. I hate Auburn. I hate Georgia. I don't like either one of these teams, but wrong is wrong, and I just think officiating was absolutely terrible. And that referee crew shouldn't officiate a game together for the rest of the year, honestly. They really shouldn't. They should not officiate a game for the rest of the year together. I don't care what they need to do, but it can't happen. But with that, man, I want to shift gears here, and I want to talk about what happened on Monday Night Football. But before that, man, you are listening to the Lace Up Sports Talk Show right here on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Audio Boom, and now via YouTube, man. You can see me on camera, man. So please like, comment, hit that subscribe button below, share, tell a friend to tell a friend, man. Again, I appreciate everybody rocking with me, continuing to stick with me throughout this journey, man, this podcast journey. But yeah, with that, man, let's jump back in, man. I want to talk about some comments that Troy Aikman made about Caleb Williams and the Chicago Bears on Monday Night Football, because Troy Aikman had a lot to say, right? And so I want to unpack that, because there was some just idiotic and crazy things that were coming out of Troy Aikman's mouth, right? And so before I get into the nonsense that was going on with Troy Aikman, Shout out to my Bears, man. Look, that's three games, three dubs in a row after going 0-2 to start the year. Three big wins and heading into this next game against the New Orleans Saints. But in this big, big win, knocking off the Washington Commanders to revenge last year's loss, which really broke my heart and a lot of our Bears fans' hearts after Jaden Daniels threw that Hail Mary. But what a way to come back and win after being down eight in the fourth quarter and rallying back and getting the ball. And Jake Moody, you know, being a guy who just got, you know, he got cut from the 49ers, got called up from the practice squad last week and was able to go 4 or 5 on his field goals. One of them was blocked, but had the game winner at the buzzer. So shout out to Jake Moody, man, for helping the Bears get this victory, man. And, you know, this is just one of those things where you can see the Ben Johnson effect. This is the type of game that the Chicago Bears historically would lose, right? Over the last 4 to 5 seasons, this is a game that the Bears would lose. They would find a way to lose that type of game. Field goal right there, chip shot. He shanks it off the side of his foot. Kicker slips. Snap is fumbled. It gets blocked. That was a historically, you know, a situation where the Bears would have lost, but not under Ben Johnson. Ben Johnson has these guys fighting, clawing, scratching each and every second, and they fight to the end. And the second week in a row where, you know, the score was actually 25-24, which is funny. They had a bye, but this is the second game in a row where that's happened. So they had a blocked field goal at the end against the Raiders and got a field goal to win it against the Commanders. So, like I said, their next game will be the New Orleans Saints at home as the Bears look to win 4 in a row and improve to 4-2. Now, with that being said, man, let's jump into what Troy Aikman was saying, because throughout the entire night, Troy Aikman had a lot of negative things to say about Caleb Williams, which I found to be really odd and crazy for him to be, you know, speaking that way about Caleb. But he had a lot to say about him. And so, you know, every single play that the Bears ran offensively, Troy Aikman seemed to nitpick and make smart remarks and side comments about Caleb Williams. I mean, he throws a great pass, about a 30-plus yard pass to Luther Burden, puts it right on him, only where he could get it. Troy Aikman says, oh, he could have been a little bit more accurate on that. He could have, you like to see him be more accurate there. That could have been more accurate and put it on him when he literally just put the ball as accurate as it could be on the receiver. He throws a pass on the move and hits his receiver on the sidelines. Oh, he could have been quicker with his decision there, and he could have you know, been more accurate with the ball. Like, what are you talking about? Then I mentioned, you know, when the Bears were down by 8 points in the fourth quarter, and it's third down, Caleb is able to get the ball out to DeAndre Swift in space. DeAndre Swift makes a really great move on the sidelines and is able to get up the field and get a 55-yard touchdown. Troy Aikman says that, oh, that's lucky on the Bears' part. What do you mean it's lucky? Like, what's lucky about that? I'm trying to understand. And it got to the point, you know, early on in the game, I was already done, because Troy just would not stop. He just kept making these side remarks and these smart comments. So I'm trying to understand where he's trying to go with this. And, you know, that was one of the most annoying games that I've had to sit there and listen to, you know, that was called by Troy Aikman and Joe Buck. And again, I couldn't understand why Troy Aikman was being such a hater. Come to find out. So, Caleb actually came, you know, after, you know, they had the post game, you know, press conference, but the next day, that Monday after, they always have like the presser, And so Caleb, you know, obviously everybody, you know, made a joke about what they heard Troy Aikman say. Ben Johnson said, look, a lot of, you know, it seems as though some people don't like the way that we're winning right now. Right. So he made that joke. Caleb, you know, obviously came out and said that there was a routine production meeting that Monday Night Football does. Caleb Williams was actually not, you know, able to connect with Troy Aikman, you know, like you normally would for a Monday Night Football production meeting due to the schedules. Right. The schedules just weren't aligned. Caleb was just, you know, he's in the process of getting ready for the game. He's lifting, he's conditioning, he's getting himself, you know, ready with playbook and all these things. So schedules didn't align. Right. And so he said that, look, he wasn't available at that time, but he did he did reach out. He called Troy Aikman. Call did not go through. Right. He wasn't able to get in contact and in touch with Troy Aikman after, you know, reaching out to him to try to coordinate some times to meet. And so, let's call a spade a spade. Troy Aikman, your feelings are hurt. you're in your feelings. Your feelings are hurt because Caleb Williams couldn't meet when you needed him to meet. So you're in your feelings about that. So you, and then turn to get on Monday Night Football to take jabs and make side comments and smart remarks about every single play that Caleb Williams is involved in. That's just childish. That's inexcusable. As an announcer, as a play by play analyst, I thought that was inexcusable. And since you had so much to say about Caleb Williams, you know, I'm in the business of actually, you know, pulling up numbers and pulling up the facts. So being that I'm in the business of pulling up the facts and the numbers, let's take a dive and a look into Troy Aikman, your career, your first 2 years, first two seasons in the NFL. And let's compare that to what Caleb Williams has done up until this point. So we're talking about a first overall pick in Troy Aikman in 1989, right? Again, Caleb Williams is first overall pick as well. So we're talking about two first overall picks. So let's look at Troy Aikman's rookie season compared to Caleb Williams' rookie season. So Troy Aikman, his stats included for his rookie season, 1,749 passing yards, 9 touchdowns, 18 interceptions. He also had an 0-11 record as a starter. Okay, so there you have it. So those are your rookie numbers, Troy Aikman. Again, I'll repeat those. 1,749 pass yards, 9 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, and you were 0-11 as a starter. Okay, so let's look at Caleb Williams' rookie season with the Chicago Bears last year. So Caleb Williams' rookie season threw for 3,541 passing yards, 20 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, and had a completion percentage of 62.5% and a passer rating of 87.8. Okay. Does anybody notice any differences? Cool. So, again, let's look at these rookie seasons, right? So Troy Aikman, and then, you know, after this, I'm going to go into the second year. So, and forgot to mention this as well, the Bears were 5-12. So, Troy Aikman, you were 0-11 as a starter. Caleb Williams was 5-12 as a starter. So, as we analyze the numbers, right, because numbers speak to the facts. So, Caleb Williams threw for 1,792 more passing yards than you, 11 more touchdowns than you, 12 less interceptions than you, and he had a 62.5% passer rating to your 52.9%, a completion percentage compared to yours at 52.9% in his rookie season. Your most passing yards in a single season was 3,445 in 1992, which Caleb Williams already passed in his rookie year with 3,541 passing yards. Almost 100 yards more in his rookie season statistically compared to your best passing yards statistically. You know, your passing season statistically from passing yards perspective. Caleb was already past that in his rookie year, throwing more yards for you in your best passing season. So let's look at Troy Aikman in his second year in the NFL. So in his second season, you know, 226 completions, 2,579 passing yards, 11 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, and his team had a 7-9 record. So, okay, some improvement for you, Troy Aikman. So let's look at Caleb Williams' second year. So far, Caleb has thrown for 1,179 yards, 9 touchdowns, and just 2 interceptions. So if we go on this trend, right, Caleb Williams is actually on pace to throw for 4,009 passing yards, 31 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, 61.6 completion percentage, a 98 passer rating, 643 rushing yards, and 7 rushing touchdowns. So if we look at this, he's statistically on pace to not only have done had a way better rookie year than you, but also a better second year than you in the NFL. So, again, I'm just stating the facts. Troy Aikman, yes, you're a Super Bowl champion. You're a Super Bowl MVP. You won with 3 Super Bowls. You had the Super Bowl MVP that you got. Your Cowboys blew out the Bills 52-17 in Super Bowl 26. Yes, you're a Hall of Fame quarterback. And again, I mentioned a 3-time Super Bowl champion. But the fact is, Troy Aikman, you've never thrown for 4,000 yards in your career. You have never thrown for 4,000 yards in your career. Caleb Williams is on pace to do that. So you had guys in Emmitt Smith and Michael Irvin that you were throwing to, Hall of Fame guys. And then you had on offense, you also had a Hall of Fame guard in Larry Allen. You had a Hall of Fame tight end in Larry Novacek. Like, let's not act like you had to do that much. And then on defense, let's not forget you had primetime Deion Sanders as well as a Hall of Fame pass rusher, Charles Haley. So let's not sit up here and act like, Troy Aikman, you were the best of the best when it comes to the quarterback position. Again, you've never thrown for 4,000 yards in a season. Your most passing yards in a season, Caleb passed that in his rookie year. So maybe you should pump the brakes a little bit and get out your feelings, because he wasn't able to do a sit down with you for Monday Night Football. Tried to reach back out to you, and you're in your feelings because it just didn't go the way that you wanted it to go. So you resort to taking jabs and taking shots at him throughout the entire football game, even after he does something positive. How childish is that? How childish could you possibly get as a Hall of Fame quarterback? Like, come on, man. And again, like I said, man, don't hate the messenger, because I'm in the business of pulling up the numbers, pulling up the facts. Okay? So, Troy, watch out, man. Calm down. It's not that deep. I promise you. You'll get an opportunity to do your sit down, and you know, and I was really proud of the way that that they did respond when asked about this, making a joke out of it. Especially Caleb Williams said, look, he could care less about what Troy Aikman has to say. They're worried about the team. They're worried about who's in the building, trying to accomplish something great this year, after so many people have dogged out my Bears for so long. And the focus on bigger and better things, Troy Aikman, not what you have to say. So continue to do whatever it is you do. Continue to be a hater, a naysayer, whatever you want to be. But one thing about it, and two things for sure, you will watch Caleb Williams continue to trend better statistically than you have, from a numbers perspective. And I hope that, he's able to get, as many Super Bowls, if not more, so that we can go back to this moment and see how, being a hater doesn't get you anywhere. And it still doesn't. But I'm just hoping and praying that Caleb is able to back that up with breaking, your records and your statistics. So with that being said, want to have this segment I introduced on the last show, man, our true or false segment, man. And I want to just go through a few true or false statements, man, give you guys what I feel, if these statements are true or false, and then we'll jump back into talking about some college football. I'll give you guys some updates on what's going on in the NLCS and ALCS, the playoffs in baseball right now. And then we'll go into some big games this weekend, and I'll give you guys my predictions on who I think is going to win in these marquee matchups that have some playoff implications. So let's go into true or false. So true or false, Ty Simpson is the Heisman front runner right now. I think that is true. I think that what Ty Simpson has been able to do as a first year starter with Alabama has been, you know, been amazing to watch, man. Had some struggles the first week. You know, a lot of people wrote off Ty. You know, I was not happy with some of the you know, decision making, but I've been a believer in Ty. You can ask people that are close to me. I've spoke Ty up. I know, you know, the type of athlete that he is. And you know, once it just took some time to get settled in and used to this offense with Ryan Grubb coming in from Seattle, and so the way that he's been able to respond from week one and now have won five games in a row has been outstanding to watch, and the way that he's really been able to take on his leadership role. I think, you know, right now he's completing 71% of his passes, and you know, the Tide have won three in a row versus ranked opponents, quality ranked opponents in the SEC. So seeing what Ty is doing in the SEC is great, and I do think that he has played his way and catapulted himself into being the Heisman front runner right now. And next up, true or false, AJ Brown will request a trade by the NFL deadline. Man, this is tough. I'm gonna say this is true. Reason being is if you look at, you know, what's been happening with the Philadelphia Eagles, and I got a lot of respect for the Eagles. That's always been, you know, a team that I've rooted for. You know, Jalen Hurts is my guy. Smitty, of course, is my guy. I got my jersey on. You know, looking at the way that the Eagles have performed this year, it's just it has not been up to par when it comes to the targets for AJ Brown. I really want to look at, you know, AJ Brown and what's been happening, you know, up until this point, because it has not looked good for these guys, right? And they've lost two games in a row. They lost to Denver at home, and they turn around and they lost to the New York Giants on the road, and it just has not looked good for them at all. And so I really wanted to, you know, look at this because there's been a lack of production offensively for the Eagles, and you know, it's really head scratching at times as you really, you know, take a look at it. You know, there's games where AJ Brown is getting like six targets. He's having, you know, in between like six to eight targets. So less than 10 targets, less than 100 yards receiving. Then, you know, he had the Rams game was probably his best game statistically that he's had. Because I think he had over 100 yards receiving in the game against the Rams. But, you know, the targets just haven't been there. Him and Jalen Hurts just have not been on the same page. And I think that, you know, it's gotten to a point now where he's, you know, he's been fed up with it. I mean, this is just something that's lingered from last year up until this point. And I just think that I don't know if I trust them to right the ship before this trade deadline comes up in a couple of weeks. Now, I could be wrong, but it just seems like this is one of those situations, and I mentioned this before, where the Terrell Owens situation with Donovan McNabb, right, how they weren't on the same page. You know, that was a little bit different of a situation, but because contracts and stuff like that got involved. But I do think that right now A.J. Brown is mentally has checked out of Philadelphia, and I think that we will see, you know, him request a trade. You know, will he be traded? I don't know, but I think that you know, he'll request one. So I'll go true on that one. I'm going to say false that he'll be traded, but I'll say it's true that he'll request one. So two part, True or false, Penn State made the wrong decision firing James Franklin. I think that this is 1,000% true, and I won't be long on this. I just think that it's crazy that, you know, you have a coach of James Franklin is a guy who had, you know, Penn State in contention to be in a national championship last few years. And, you know, these guys were in, you know, the playoffs, made a run in the playoffs. Had an opportunity to go, you know, be in a national championship game. He's been pretty successful. This year they've fallen off of a cliff. They've gone, you know, they've lost three games. Their you know, quarterback's out for the season. And you know, all things have been going bad for Penn State. But to sit up there and fire James Franklin is just ridiculous to me, because who are you gonna go get? Who are you going out here to get to replace what James Franklin has done? And that's not to mention, you know, you guys owe him $50 million. So by firing him, you still owe him 50 grand. So what are you going to do? Who are you going to go out here and get? I don't know, but we'll see. I guess who knows? But I just don't think that you're just going to replace James Franklin and that's just going to solve your problems. And now with that happening, now you have a lot of players decommitting. Your recruits are leaving. So Penn State, I don't know what y'all are doing up there, but we'll see. We'll see what y'all are going to try to accomplish. Who knows? True or false, is Asia Wilson the GOAT of the WNBA? Man, I'm going to say true, man. I'm going to say true again. Again, what I mentioned earlier in the show about what she has done, I think that, you know, her accolades, what she's doing and what she's been able to do and what she's continued to show us each and every year, man, she is on, you know, she's unstoppable. And I think that, you know, her numbers speak for themselves. So I have no issue with saying that she's the GOAT. And again, that's not to take away from anybody else. I just think that what she's been doing has been nothing short of incredible. So I'll go true with that. But that was our true or false segment, man. What you can do, you know, if you like that segment, you could give me some true or false statements that you want me to bring onto the show. Feel free to leave those in the comment section or whatever true or false that you want to do. I'll have some more different fun segments that I'm doing as we go along here. But that was just one that I wanted to kind of throw in here. So again, feel free to chime in and leave your suggestions or comments in that comment section below. Or feel free to reach out to me directly, those of you who have my contact information. But comment sections work just as fine as well. I want to take a quick look at the new rankings, the top 25 rankings in college football, because there have been some shifts that have happened since some games this past weekend. Got some more big games coming up. But right now, I just want to kind of run down the top 10. Give my thoughts and opinions, and then we'll move on into our next topic. So right now you have Ohio State still sitting there at number one. Miami's still sitting right behind them at number two. Indiana has moved up to number three. They move up four spots after knocking off Oregon on the road last weekend in a big win. You got Texas A&M moves up one spot to number four. Ole Miss is right behind them at number five. They actually moved down a spot after, you know, they had some struggles against Washington State at home. Didn't look too good, but they were able to pull out that victory. And then you got my Alabama Crimson Tide, man, moving up two spots to number six. The highest one-loss team in the country right now. Texas Tech is number seven. Oregon falls to number eight, so they fall five spots after being knocked off by Indiana. You got Georgia moved up number one spot, up one spot to number nine, and you have LSU moving up one spot to 10. So, yeah. So, looking at this right now, obviously the SEC is well represented. You got a couple of Big Ten teams, three Big Ten teams in the top 10 right now. SEC, you have five teams from the SEC being represented. You have one team from the ACC, and then you have the Big 12 being represented in here as well. So, you know, with this, man, you know, obviously love to see the SEC being represented. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, for me, I don't think that there's one team that's just that clear cut better than everybody. I still don't feel that way. Ohio State is the team that has looked, you know, in people's minds, they've looked the best and the most complete. But for me, I still think that, you know, Ohio State is a team that can be beat. I think Miami is a team that can be beat. Indiana is definitely a team that can be beat. One of the teams that I, you know, that has impressed me in the top 10, you know, you look at Texas A&M and what they've been able to do, man. That's a hot team right there. But everybody is beatable, you know. But I'm looking at, you know, Texas A&M as being a team that is making a lot of noise, you know, in the SEC, and they are rolling really well. Of course, you know, Alabama, you know, my boys have been doing their thing, and you know, excited for this next matchup against Tennessee that they have. But you know, Texas Tech is another team, man, that looks pretty good. You know, I haven't really had a chance to sit there and watch them, but I've seen some highlights, and I've, you know, checked out a few of their game highlights, and man, Texas Tech is a team that looks pretty nice as well. But I like the variety in the top 10 right now. I think that, you know, the schedule, as we're continuing to further on into conference play, is going to continue to, you know, work itself out. But, you know, I'm looking at a team like, you know, Miami and ACC. It really doesn't look, honestly, Miami looks like they're going to come out of the ACC, if you ask my opinion. I mean, I know they have some games coming up against Syracuse. Syracuse is always a team that's been a sneaky, tricky team. I mean, they upset Clemson. You know, they upset Miami last year. So you just can't never look past Syracuse. But, you know, and you still have Ohio State having to go on the road at the end of the year to play Michigan. So just anything and a lot can happen between now and the end of the season over these next 6 to 7 weeks. As we approach the, you know, the second half of the season. But this is where, you know, playoff implications, things are starting to heat up, and conference title implications too, because we are in conference play. So every single game matters up until this point. Now, every game matters, but it really, really matters right now because we're in conference play. So those are my thoughts on that, man. And you know, Indiana, they, I think Indiana does look better than they did last year. I do think that, you know, I still, you know, top three, you know, it is what it is right now. I think everything, like I said, I don't get too caught up in that too much. I think that, you know, ultimately everything works itself out. So, I will, you know, reserve the rest of my comments, as the weeks continue to progress and we continue to look at the top 10 each and every week from this point on. But with that, man, again, you are listening to the Laced Up podcast right here on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Audio Boom, and now YouTube, man. You guys can see me on camera. Again, appreciate everybody rocking with me, continue to stick with me throughout this process, and excited to continue on, you know, talking some good sports with you guys. Let's move on, man. Let's talk about the ALCS and the NLCS. This is Major League Baseball playoffs that are going on right now. So just wanted to quickly give you guys some updates in what's been going on between these two series as we figure out who's going to advance to the World Series. So right now you currently have the Dodgers that have taken a 3-0 lead over the Milwaukee Brewers. And you have the Blue Jays that have taken, you know, have tied the series 2-2 with the Seattle Mariners. Let me just say, I couldn't be more happy that the Dodgers are up 3-0 on the Milwaukee Brewers. The Brewers did knock out my Cubs in an elimination game the other week, last week. And so, you know, with the Brewers coming down, and they acted a fool. They brought up it's tradition for when the Cubs win to bring out a W flag, and we call it fly the W. And so the Brewers beat us at home, and you know, of course they bring out a L flag, and you know, making all the fun and the jokes. So what better way to humble Milwaukee and seeing them down 3-0 on the verge of getting swept to the Los Angeles Dodgers. So look, bulletin board material. The jokes write themselves. And I love how every Cubs fan, after each one of these three losses, go on top of the official Milwaukee Brewers page, myself included, and post that picture that that team took with that L flag. So y'all have a good time continuing to fly the L. So congratulations to y'all on the verge of getting swept. With that being said, man, you look, these series are going to continue tonight. You have the Blue Jays, facing the Seattle Mariners. This is a pivotal game five in this series. So who's going to take a 3-2 lead with the opportunity to bring this thing home? That game is going to kick off at 6:08 p.m. And then you have the Brewers and the Dodgers. This is game four. That is going to kick off at 8:38 with the Dodgers looking to complete the sweep on the Milwaukee Brewers and advance to the World Series. So with that being said, man, I want to quickly dive into some big games this upcoming weekend in college football, because we have some matchups that I am looking forward to looking at and excited about. And so want to give you guys my picks on these games. And then we'll go ahead and bring this one home, man. So first and foremost, I want to start off with the LSU Tigers, number 10 LSU Tigers, going on the road to face number 17 Vandy. That is a noon kickoff game tomorrow. Vandy is actually a 2.5-point favorite in this game. The over under is 48.5. Now, Vandy is coming off of a loss to Alabama on the road. They did have a bye week last week, but the week before that, they had a loss against Alabama on the road. They did jump out to a pretty quick start, but my Tide locked in the second half and was able to shut all that down. Garrett Nussmeier, let's look at him. Look, he's had issues turning the ball over this year. He has 5 interceptions so far. So, that's going to be something to watch. And you look at, Diego Pavia and that offense, how dangerous they are, especially at home. You know, they're able to extend drives. They're able to, really, really ground and pound you up and down the field, and then, hit a big play over the top when need be. So, Vandy is for real. They are a serious team. And so looking at this game, I think that, Vandy, they're going to get some big turnovers. I think that they're going to control the time of possession in this game. I think that they'll be able to extend drives with that running attack and Diego Pavia and both of their running backs that they have. And so I'm going to roll with Vandy to get the upset over LSU at home. Next up, man, let's look at number 5 Ole Miss is going on the road to face number 9 Georgia. So in this game, Georgia is actually a 7.5-point favorite. The over under is 57.5. I'm looking at this game, you look at Ole Miss, they get by Washington State at home after struggling, and I really didn't watch the guys taking a look at the score, and I was like, look, what does LSU have going on? What does Ole Miss have going on? Excuse me. As I'm looking at the game, I'm like, I'm confused why it's only like 13-0, and then the score was like really tight, like in the halftime. I just couldn't understand what was going on. So they were able to pull out a nail biter against Washington State at home. And then you have Georgia, they're coming off that controversial, officiating win. That's what I call it, controversial officiating win on the road against Auburn. And they're coming in pretty confident and excited about this opportunity to knock off a top 5 team and add that to the resume. You look at Trinidad Chambliss, right? He's been rolling. He's been a true dual threat quarterback for Lane Kiffin in that Ole Miss offense. I think that, with him, that's going to be the key. He's going to be an X factor, especially with his ability to, extend the play, right? UGA's bread and butter is obviously their running game, their two running backs. So that's going to be something that they're going to use as a focal point for them. Now, one key thing to remember and to know that about this game and about Ole Miss and Georgia, Ole Miss is 17th in ranked in the nation in third down offense. Now, Georgia has had some trouble with getting off the field on third down. So that's going to be something to watch, especially with a guy like Trinidad Chambliss being able to extend plays. And, you know, he could hit you over the top, and he could also kill you with his legs. So can Georgia get off the field on third down? I think that Ole Miss is going to extend some drives in this game on some big third downs. I think that they're going to take advantage of UGA's secondary. I think they still have some holes back there in their secondary. We saw that, Tennessee really take advantage of that. We saw Alabama and Ty Simpson really pick those guys apart. And I'm going to roll with Ole Miss to knock off Georgia in Athens and improve their record to 7-0. And last but not least, man, let's talk about my Alabama Crimson Tide. This is the third Saturday in October. We know what that means, man. Alabama is an 8.5-point favorite in this matchup. The over-under is 59.5 points. Tennessee is coming off of a high-scoring game against Arkansas at home. They really were controlling the game, and Arkansas stormed back toward the end there. Now, the Vols have put up big numbers in each and every one of their games. They put up over 30 points, with Joey Aguilar as the starter. And we know how, complex and how tricky that offense is to stop. They are averaging, well over 30 points a game. And another thing, they've scored on their first possession in every single one of their games so far. So that is something to watch. Bama is coming off of a big road win against Missouri, this past weekend. They were able to, hold Hardy, Missouri's running back, who is, arguably the best running back in the SEC right now, hold him to 52 rushing yards. And they were able to come up with some big turnovers on a defensive end. It was a game that should have, it should have and could have been, put to bed in the first half. But, that's neither here nor there. Bama just, missed on some opportunities to put some touchdowns on the board. I think Alabama did a pretty good job of controlling the majority of that game and really, again, could have put that away early. But Alabama with that win, again, that gave them three top 25 wins in a row. They look to add to that. I think Ty Simpson has been balling. I mentioned that before, 71% completion percentage. Jeremy Bernard is leading those guys from the wide receiver's perspective. And I think that, he's catapulted and played himself in the position of the Heisman front runner. The running game has been looking better for the Tide. That's one thing that we, said should be something that should get better and be a focal point. And they have done a pretty good job of that. And now Bama did lose Derek Meadows, wide receiver, and Jam Miller. So both of those guys were lost to a concussion off some nasty hits that should have been both called as targeting on Missouri. Only one of them was called targeting, but the hit against Jam Miller, inexcusable why that shouldn't have been a targeting call. That goes back to some of that officiating I was talking about earlier in the show where it's just been egregious. Jam Miller has progressed throughout this week. They actually list him as probable, so there's a chance that he could play. My opinion, I think that they should probably just rest him into the LSU game, so maybe he'll dress out and just sit out. But no need to just rush him back out there if not necessary. Looking at this game and analyzing it, Tennessee, they play a lot of man-to-man, which gives opportunity for Alabama to take advantage of that. They also give up the most points in the SEC. They're giving up a lot of points. I think that Alabama is going to roll offensively. I think that they're going to get some big stops defensively. This can, be a, back and forth game in the beginning, potentially. But I do think that Alabama is going to settle in. I think that they're going to get the big win at home, get their fourth win against a top 25 opponent, and improve that record to 6-1, man. So, of course, I'm rolling with the Tide, man. There's nothing new here on this end, man. We stay repping all day, every day, man. Got to roll with my Tide. But with that, man, I really appreciate everybody, again, jumping in, joining the podcast, giving me time to talk some sports with you guys. I appreciate you guys again continuing to rock with me. Excited about continuing to give you guys some more content each and every week. With that, man, hope everybody enjoys this weekend. Be safe, man. I got a 5K to do in the morning, so y'all pray for me, man. I'm excited about that. My first 5K. And then I'm coming back, man, to lock in and watch some college football. And then, of course, watch some NFL on Saturday. So, again, man, y'all be blessed. Be safe. And enjoy your weekend, man. I'm out. And as always, Roll Tide. Peace.